You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right. With hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show.
Government says something, you only have one question to ask. Is it true?
The search is underway to find those responsible.
We write for people whose kids get sent to war. Our readers need to know.
The president's gonna invade Iraq.
If they want a war, they're gonna get one.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe.
I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. That was a trailer for Shock and Awe, a new film by Rob Reiner that tells the true story of the four journalists who got it right in the lead-up to the 2003 Iraq War, when they reported the absence of evidence that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and questioned the Bush administration's fundamental justification for the invasion. The film stars Woody Harrelson, James Marsden, Tommy Lee Jones, and Rob Reiner himself as John Walcott, the editor of the Knight Ridder News Syndicate that broke the story. And today I welcome Rob back to the podcast to talk about his long road to finally making his movie about the war in Iraq and just how we got there, a subject that even he acknowledges America still may not be ready for. He discusses how the Pentagon subverted the usual intelligence channels in making the case for WMD, the lesser-known news syndicate that beat everyone else to the story, and why the mainstream media at the time ignored all the warning signs. He talks about his love for classic newsroom films like All the President's Men and the urgency to make Shock and Awe at a time when the free press and the truth are under greater assault than ever. He also offers an update on what his group, the Committee to Investigate Russia, is doing to battle the attempts to muddy the waters around the Trump-Russia scandal, and cautions that the rhetoric on the left treads a thin line between energizing their base and energizing the other side. Plus, we ponder how Archie Bunker went from a punchline to a political movement. Coming up with Rob Reiner in just a moment. Happy to welcome Rob Reiner back to the show. He's the Academy Award-nominated actor-director behind some of the most beloved films of the past few decades, from Princess Bride and When Harry Met Sally to Misery, A Few Good Men, and The Bucket List. His latest film stars Woody Harrelson, James Marsden, Tommy Lee Jones, and himself as the only journalists who got it right about the Iraq War and weapons of mass destruction. The movie's called Shock and Awe. Rob Reiner, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's such a pleasure to sit down with you again. I can't believe that I'm already saying this, but for anyone who is too young to remember 9/11 or the first days of the war in Iraq, remind us what the title of the film Shock and Awe comes from.
Well, that was the phrase that the Bush administration used as a way of describing what they were going to do upon the invasion of Iraq and their bombing of Baghdad. They were saying it's going to be shock and awe. We're just going to shock them into submission.
Yeah. It's just going to be an easy liberation campaign.
Yeah, cakewalk, as they said.
Now, I know that you've been wanting to do a film about Iraq for probably a few years now. How did you land on this particular angle?
Well, it's interesting because I actually wanted to do a film about this right after the invasion. I was mortified by what was happening. I was of draft age during the Vietnam War, and I just couldn't believe that twice in my lifetime we were going to be going to war based on lies. And there's a character in the film played by James Marsden. It's Warren Strobel, and he has a line where he says, it felt like you're watching your child run into the street and feeling helpless to stop them from getting hit by the truck. And that's the way I felt about it. I thought, how did this happen? I mean, it was so obvious that it was based on lies and based on no real rationale. So I started thinking about how to approach it. And my initial thought was to do it as a satire, like a Dr. Strangelove kind of thing. And I worked with Larry Gelbart, who's a great writer. But we couldn't get a script we liked. And then I worked with another writer trying to make it dramatic. And then I saw this documentary by Bill Moyers, who was the press secretary for Lyndon Johnson. And as a matter of fact, his quote is right at the beginning of the film, which is, you know, a democracy essentially is saying that democracy is dependent on a free and independent press. We have to have one in order to have a healthy democracy. And in his documentary, he interviewed these four great journalists from Knight Ridder News who got it all right. They got everything right. There was a zeitgeist at the time. People were patriotic. They were traumatized by 9/11, and many of them didn't want to go against the Bush administration for fear of being called unpatriotic. But these guys dug deep, and they got it all right, and that became the basis for the film because I saw, okay, this is the way in.
Yeah, you're breaking some new ground here because we've seen plenty of good movies about the combat aspect of Iraq, The Hurt Locker, American Sniper, Jarhead, etc. But I can't think of a film that actually delves into the most important topic, how the hell we got there.
Exactly. And that was the thing that drove me crazy because everybody knows war is hell. That theme we've seen, no matter whether you agreed or disagreed with going to war in Iraq. But I saw us going to war in Vietnam during the 60s, and I thought, this is really immoral and illegal and wrong, and it's not good foreign policy. I saw it happening again, and I said, why isn't anybody telling the real story of what happened here? And it took this long to tell it. And what's interesting is now it's coming out at a time when the press is under attack, being called the enemy of the people, being called fake news. And here we have the press now working very hard to try to get to the truth and get the truth to the people about what Trump is about, what he did with the Russians, and what has happened with this country in terms of selling it out. And they're hitting these terrible headwinds, more so even than what we witnessed during 9/11. You've got basically 40% of the country being fed outright lies. And they suck it up. You have Trump exacerbating, and they play into each other's fears, and it's impossible to penetrate those people.
Yeah, in fact, there's a great line that you deliver as John Walcott in this film, and you say to your reporters, if the government says something, you only have to ask one question: is it true?
Yes, and that's the most important line in the film, and that is the job of journalists, to find the truth, because unless the public is made aware of what is actually going on, they can't make informed decisions, and you don't have a democracy.
I mean, at first blush, that would appear to be something so simple and obvious, but do you think that today's media is losing sight of that?
Well, there are two medias, and this is what's really scary. You always have policy debates. Every administration will put out propaganda to try to sell their policy or rationale to go to war. But this is the first time in American history where you have essentially state-run media backing up the administration. So even though we have the media working very hard to get to the truth, they cannot penetrate that 40%.
Yeah.
Because you have essentially state-run media. Fox News is...
The alt-right media.
Breitbart, Fox News, Breitbart, Sinclair, Alex Jones.
A million nameless bloggers are saying
the most insane, ridiculous things. Think about this for a second. You have the Intelligence Committee of the Senate, bipartisan, Richard Burr, Mark Warner, coming out with a report that says in no uncertain terms, the Russians attacked our election, attacked the core of our democracy in order to help Trump win, to hurt Hillary Clinton and to help Trump win. That's an enormous story.
Yeah.
That is way beyond anything that we saw with Watergate or Iran-Contra. This is about the undermining of American democracy. And yet, we're not hearing about that. We're hearing about, Dershowitz is worried about they won't have, can't have dinner on, on Martha's Vineyard or, whatever we're hearing about. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. And that's what's so disturbing. You know, there's no guarantee that democracy lasts forever. We just had our 242nd birthday, and a sweet spot of any great civilization is anywhere from 250 to 300 years. And the democracy is only as good as the people who are living it and respecting the institutions and the rule of law. Right now, you've got a president who is calling the press the enemy of the people, is not respecting the rule of law, and has a cult-like following, not just of his supporters, but of the Republicans in Congress. So there's no checks and balances. So far, we have a court system that is holding. But if there are certain issues that are going to come to the Supreme Court, and if that Supreme Court is shifted the way we, which will probably be based on who he's going to nominate to replace Anthony Kennedy, then there are questions of whether or not a president can be indicted, whether or not a president can be compelled to testify, and whether or not a president can pardon himself. And those issues may wind up in front of a court with nominees that he has put there. That, to me, is if we don't wake up, if we don't open our eyes now and see what is unraveling, before you know it, we're not going to be living in a democracy.
Yeah, and you were one of the people who spearheaded this group called the Committee to Investigate Russia,
along with
some pretty heavyweight guys like James Clapper and John Brennan. Do you think the reason that the media seems to be ignoring the conclusions of the Senate Committee on Russia is just the fact that everything that comes out of the House is so much more incendiary? There's so many more theatrics every time Nunez makes a statement.
Well, I mean, Nunez is an apparatchik. I mean, he is working for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, the Congress is not supposed to be, the Congress is supposed to act as a check and a balance to the executive branch. Mm-hmm. But you've got Republicans in Congress, and that intelligence committee in the House has been completely hijacked. Mm-hmm. They issued a ridiculous report, and Trump says, see, no collusion. And the Senate report doesn't say that.
Yeah.
Doesn't say that.
Yes, it's a rational, fair, and balanced assessment
Absolutely.
Of what's going on,
well,
both
it,
from
it's not
the
even
Republicans
fair,
and the Democrats.
It's not even fair and balanced. I mean, it's fair.
It's fair. It's true.
Balance, to me, is... Yeah. You only balance something if there is equal weight on both sides of an argument. You can have an honest argument about whether or not you believe you should have an abortion or not have an abortion, and whether or not you believe that is a religious belief. And you can have those arguments. That's fine. But there are certain things that are no arguments. 2 + 2 = 4. Yeah. I mean, there's not, half the people think it's 4 and half the people think it's 5. It doesn't work that way.
given that the press is under this near constant attack from the president and his own propaganda arm, it's certainly not easy at this time to be in the news business. I know that you screened Shock and Awe for the Washington Press Corps at the Newseum. How would you describe their mood given all that's happening right
now? Well, they love the film because we're accurate. I mean, we had the four journalists were intimately involved in making the film and working on the script and on the set all the time. So there is an accuracy about how the press is portrayed. So they love that aspect of it. The parts of it where the honest media recognizes they got it wrong. They got it wrong. The New York Times had to issue an apology after the, you know, after we invaded Iraq. Now, I did have a screening at another time in D.C. for a smaller group, but it included General Shinseki, who testified in front of Congress before we went to Iraq and said that if you're going to invade Iraq and in attempt to try to secure it, it's going to take 300,000 to 400,000 troops. And he was fired after that. And also Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff, he was there. Shinseki said he cried when he saw the movie because he knew what was going to happen and he couldn't get through. Wilkerson said it got him angry all over again. He watched it and it got him angry all over again. So, you know, the reaction now is yes, of course, but it was, of course, at the time for those of us who looked at it and said, there's no way that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with 9/11. There's no way that those aluminum tubes could be used to enrich uranium. And there's no way that we had proof that there was WMD. There were a guy named Hans Blix was coming back. Right. He was a UN weapons inspector. He told us every couple weeks to a month he hadn't found anything. Well, if we were going to go to war based on that, let's have the let's have the proof. Let's know that they're there. And we could have found that out, and we would have found out they didn't have it. But we know that the Bush administration wanted to go to war even before we were attacked on 9/11, and we talk about that in the film as well.
Well, I'd wager that not many of my listeners are actually familiar with the news organization that broke this original story about Iraq and WMD. So tell us a little bit about Knight Ridder and John Walcott.
Yeah, Knight Ridder was a news consortium like a number of news consortiums that feed a number of papers. They had many outlets to different papers. I think the Philadelphia Inquirer was probably their flagship paper. They have since been bought by McClatchy. And Walcott and Strobel and Lande now work for Reuters. But Reuters is, again, another news service. AP, right. UPI, those are news services.
Right.
And that's what Knight Ridder was. And John Walcott made the point that, we write for we don't write for people who send other people's kids to war. We write for people whose kids get sent to war. And, you know, a lot of the papers were distributed at military bases. So they felt an obligation to make sure that people knew the truth of what was happening.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Rob Reiner when we come back in just a moment. Hey, folks. I recently had a huge milestone in my life. I decided to ask my girlfriend to marry me, and when I did, I turned to adiamore.com for the perfect engagement ring. I shopped around, both online and in person, and no one beat adiamore.com for the best price and the best quality. I even met with Sam, the owner of Adiamore, and I've never met anyone who knows more about diamonds and jewelry. That's because his family's been in the jewelry business since 1950. Eventually, I decided on a stunning 3-carat oval stone in a beautiful 3-stone trillion setting, and my new fiancé was thrilled. Visit adiamore.com/kick and browse their huge selection of diamonds. You can go on their site and try different diamonds with different settings until you come up with the perfect ring for you or the woman you love. All of Adiamore's diamonds are GIA certified, and their rings come with a lifetime guarantee against material defects. Plus, Adiamore even gives you 30 days to evaluate the deal and make sure that you're 100% happy with your purchase. That's because the folks at Adiamore know that once you find a jeweler you can trust, you've got a jeweler for life, and you'll keep coming back year after year. But look, don't take my word for it. Check out Adia Moore's reviews on Yelp. So do yourself a favor. If you're shopping for an engagement ring or a gift, even if you may think you're going to go somewhere else, before you purchase, you owe it to yourself to click on adiamoore.com/kick, look at their selection and compare. That's Adia Moore, adiamoore.com/kick. Their quality and prices speak for themselves, and my fiance and I couldn't be happier. How do you stay up to date with the latest business news? If you're still relying on traditional news outlets, keeping up with the news feels like a chore, but it doesn't have to be that way. Business news can be enjoyable, even something you actually look forward to. How? It's called Morning Brew, and it's a free daily email newsletter that delivers the latest business news directly to your inbox every weekday morning. The writers at Morning Brew curate the top business stories that you should know about and deliver them in a conversational and witty tone. Best of all, it's just a quick 5-minute read. Seriously, imagine getting all the information you need to start your day in just 5 minutes and enjoying every second of it. I know how overwhelming it can be when you've got so much news coming at you every day, and that's why I subscribe to Morning Brew for my business news. I love that it's concise, easy to read, and even entertaining, a great, fast way to get the most essential business news before I head into the office. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for free at morningbrew.com/kick. That's morningbrew.com/kick to start getting your daily dose of business news. And now, back to the show.
More than this is a war film, it's sort of in the grand tradition of the great newspaper films like The Front Page, All the President's Men.
All the President's Men is as good as it gets. That's as good as it gets. I've seen it 20, 25 times. Yeah. It's a brilliant film. In this case, they brought down a president. And we knew they had brought down a president, and we're still anxious to see it happen. In this case, it's about people who got to the truth, but were not paid attention to. And it's a cautionary tale of why it's so critical that the press do their due diligence and get to the truth to give people an understanding of what's going on.
And I noticed that four of the journalists received associate producer credits on the movie. Were they fairly hands-on in the making of the film?
Oh, yeah, they were totally. As I said before, they were oversaw each draft of the script. They were on set for when we were shooting the news scenes. As a matter of fact, there's a speech that I give. You reference it about, if the government says something, you only have one question to ask. Is it true? That wasn't in initially. And John Landay, played by Woody Harrelson in the film, comes up to us and said, you should put down what John Walcott actually said in the film. And John was there and he told us what he had said. We wrote it down and we put it right in there the day we were shooting.
Yeah, it's a great scene. And I understand that you stepped in at the last minute to play Walcott. That wasn't the original plan, right?
No, this really wasn't. I mean, Alec Baldwin was supposed to play that part. Okay. And we had actually rearranged the entire schedule so that he could get out on a Friday night so he could go up to New York and play Trump in Saturday Night Live. Yeah. And we had been shooting for a week. Woody Harrelson and Tommy Lee Jones, everybody had been shooting. And on a Saturday before Alec was supposed to shoot his first day on Monday, I get a call from the agent saying he's dropping out. He's not going to do it. And I went, oh, my God, what are you talking about? We're ready to go. I mean, and so I didn't know what to do. And so my wife, Michelle, who's one of the producers on the film, she suggested to me, why don't you play the part? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, my God, I don't know. I guess, I'm available, and I work cheap. So I figured I'll do it. And then she gave me one bit of direction, she said, well, I'm playing John Walcott. So she said, try to be less Jewish. That was her one bit of direction to me. Yeah.
I mean, I've never understood how guys like you and Woody Allen can actually juggle being in front of the camera and behind the camera like that. I mean, I know this was last minute, but
I don't
you
like it.
Usually
to be,
avoid
yeah,
doing
no,
double
I,
duty.
I've done it a couple of times. I did in Spinal Tap. I've been in a couple of movies.
Right.
But I don't really like it because it's a split focus. I mean, my attention goes into two different places. I have to, after every take, I have to run back and look at the monitor and see how it was. And so I didn't like it.
Handle.
But, this was, desperate times, desperate measures, yeah.
Yeah, one thing that I didn't know is that in the building of the case that Saddam had WMD, apparently it comes out in this film, it was a revelation to me, that the Pentagon sort of set up its own shadow department to subvert the usual intelligence channels. Now, I always thought that the military had such strict adherence to protocol and chain of command that prevents something like that. So how the hell does something like this happen?
Well, what happens is, you know, the military has a military intelligence. Mm-hmm. There are a number of intelligence agencies spread throughout the government, and they do have their own. But in this case, they decided they wanted to go to Iraq, like I say, even before 9/11. And that's important to understand. Because what our journalists discovered, our Knight Ridder journalists, is that the day after 9/11, they were hearing a lot of chatter about going to Iraq. And they were saying, wait a minute, the attack came from Afghanistan. Why are we even talking about Iraq? So they started digging into it. And what happened was they had made the determination to go to Iraq based on a research paper that was done by a number of neocons called The Project for the New American Century. And in this treatise, it was all about how America was the last remaining superpower, had emerged after the Berlin Wall fell, and how were they going to use that power to spread democracy throughout the world. And they picked Iraq as a place that they thought they could put a Western-style democracy in there that hopefully would proliferate and eventually help Israel. And so that was the idea. So they then decided, if we're going to go to Iraq, we have to have a good rationale for it. And since we hadn't had weapons inspectors in Iraq for 4 years, they had been kicked out, we had no idea whether or not they had continued developing their, you know, their WMD programs or not. So what they did was they got they set up this intelligence apparatus at the Pentagon, and they started looking at different things, and they started cherry picking intelligence rather than looking at the overall breadth of what the intelligence community was saying. And if you looked at it, there were a lot of caveats in the National Intelligence Estimate that eventually came out. There were a lot of caveats saying, you know, we're not sure about this. We don't know if there is or not. But they picked certain bits and pieces and basically made the case that way.
Yeah, you know, I had James Clapper on not long ago, and I know that you know him through Investigate Russia Foundation. I asked him this because he was involved in that intelligence assessment, and I asked him, is it a case of willfully ignoring information, or is it an honest mistake made in good faith? He seemed to feel that it was an honest mistake in good faith. What have you concluded at this point?
Well, I think some people could have made an honest mistake, but there was no urgency from the intelligence community saying, we better go into Iraq because he's developing his nuclear program and he's got chemical and biological weapons that he's... Yeah. There was no intelligence that said
no
that.
No imminent threat.
No, there was no imminent threat.
Yeah. And what's funny, I also had Donald Rumsfeld on not that long ago,
probably
a year or two.
I'm curious to hear what he has to say.
To this day, he still claims that the WMD were loaded onto trains from Iraq to Syria, and I guess somehow they're sitting somewhere in Bashar Assad's basement. And yeah, I think he'll stick by that till the day he dies.
Well, he might. I mean, I'm hoping that at some point we're going to see, if you've seen the film Fog of War, which Robert McNamara comes out in his 90s and talks about the truth of what was going on in Vietnam and how they had kept the truth from the American people. I'm hoping that at some point, whether it's Rumsfeld, I doubt whether it'll be Cheney, but certainly Colin Powell. I'm hoping that at some point he comes out and does what, and sets the record straight.
Well, when the Knight Ridder journalists exposed these backroom machinations that were going on leading up to Iraq, major media outlets pretty much ignored the story, and even the papers in Knight Ridder's own syndicate pretty much refused to run it. Why didn't it get more oxygen at the time?
Well, I think, first of all, some of the Knight Ridder papers did run it, but the Philadelphia Inquirer and others did not run it. They were swept up in patriotism and not wanting to look unpatriotic. And there was a groupthink that just swept through Washington. And to be honest, the Bush administration never gave it any oxygen. It never broke through because they never refuted it. They never said, oh, you're wrong. That's not right. They just ignored it.
Yeah. Now, when you were trying to get this made, did you encounter a lot of people in the business who still felt that it wasn't good box office to question the war in Iraq?
Oh, it's always difficult getting independent films made.
But especially political
yes,
films.
Yes, political films about the war. I mean, it's always difficult. So, I think at this point, most Americans know that it was a mistake and should never have gone there. And it was not only terrible loss of life for Americans and Iraqis, but also, you know, $2 trillion and counting of what it's going to cost us. So everybody knows at this point. But I think that whenever you're dealing with a political film, it's very hard to get financing.
In light of the past year and a half of the Trump White House, has your perspective on Bush 43 and his place in history changed at all?
No. I think that Bush 43 is a decent person. He has love in his heart and some, you know, decency on some level. I think he made a terrible decision in going to Iraq. And the results of that decision is far worse at this point to what Donald Trump is doing. But what Donald Trump is doing is insidious. And if it's allowed to go unchecked, and it's continuing to go unchecked, the results may be far, far worse than what George W. Bush did.
Yeah, and you recently got some attention for criticizing Robert De Niro for saying F Trump on the Tony Awards. Now, I don't want to really rehash that, but I do want to ask you about the broader point that you made when you said there's a fine line between energizing the base and energizing the other side, because I see this all the time in my interactions with Trump supporters and in how the alt-right spins any legitimate criticism of Trump without laying down arms and just abandoning the debate entirely. How do we walk that tightrope, or is engagement a lost cause at this point?
Well, you can't engage the other side. They're cemented. Okay. They are cemented. You cannot convince them.
So how do you win?
Thought I had about this, and I have a lot of Republican friends that I've made because of Donald Trump, people who are thoughtful, principled, reasonable Republicans who I don't agree with on a lot of policy things. But the one thing we do agree on is that this president is horrific, is a nightmare, is a cancer on the soul of America. This guy is he's a racist. He does not respect women. He's got mental issues that, somebody would have to, with a degree would have to figure out what that is. And he is only interested in himself and aggrandizing himself in monetary terms. So I don't know how to get to those people. All I know is that he has a grip on them like a cult right now.
Yeah.
And the only thought I had is reaching out to friends like David Frum and reaching out to others who I am, friendly with, is to say, what is the way? I mean, I've been on Laura Ingraham's show. I've been Tucker Carlson's show a couple of times. But when you're on television, it's different. You're on television, it's a show. And they want you to be the libtard, and they want them to be the conservative, and look, you're going at each other. But I just have to believe that, Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson on some level have a heart and a soul and are smart enough to see what is happening. I mean, even Laura Ingraham the other day, said, Scott Pruitt, it's a bridge too far here. I mean, but look how long it took for somebody to be, the most corrupt cabinet official I can ever remember being thrown out. So at a certain point, if people like Laura Ingraham and people like Tucker Carlson can start to really talk about what is really happening here, maybe we can peck away a little bit at some of those people, because it'll give him a little less ammunition.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the one thing that gives me hope is that I keep thinking that at some point, everyone must have their own red line. And hopefully sooner than later, we're going to reach that.
No, they don't.
I don't know.
No, they don't. You see, here's the problem. If you're racist, if you really believe that black people and brown people are coming to the country and making the country worse.
Yeah.
There is no red line. There's nothing he can do that's going to, because that's what he stokes. And that's right out of authoritarian fascist playbook.
Yeah.
You stoke people's anger and you say your lot in life and the problems you have are based on those people over there, the others. And if you can keep stoking that, then you can keep those people. The way in which he could start to lose support, hopefully within the base, and that is the electeds, is people on Fox News saying, you know, it's not right. It's not right to stoke racism. Mm-hmm. That's not a good thing. It's not right to say it's okay to call the press the enemy of the people.
I mean, it must be surreal for you to look back at your days on All in the Family when Archie Bunker was this guy that everyone made fun of. And it was funny because we all recognized how misguided he was and they was totally out of step. Do you ever wonder how the hell over the past, 48 years, we've gone from Archie Bunker as a punchline to Archie Bunker as a political movement?
Well, that's what's incredible. I mean, we've had racism in this country forever. It's one of our original sins that we've had. And we seem to be, or at least it seemed to the white community, and I put myself in there being naive, to think that we were moving in a good direction. We were seeing, the Brown versus the Board of Education, the Civil Rights Act, Loving versus Virginia.
Progress
was being made, and then eventually leading to Barack Obama becoming the first African American president. What I didn't, and we were divided as a country, certainly along ideological lines, Republican and Democrat. But what I didn't realize is not only how strong the racism still is in this country, but how many people feel that kind of racism, because Donald Trump is a reaction to Barack Obama. He comes in and, launching his campaign with calling Obama illegitimate and stoking racism by saying Mexicans are rapists and murderers. This is and opens this wound that has been there, but I never realized the volume of people that there are anywhere from 30 to 40% of Americans really feel that. I don't know if you saw that video with that little boy, those two little kids talking about why they were at the rally for Trump in Montana, because there are too many Mexicans in the country. And now, their parents are saying that.
Yeah.
They really believe that. They really believe that.
Sure. Yeah. I just have to ask, has anyone from the Bush administration seen your film, or have you gotten any reaction from anyone?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, David, yeah. I mean, the people have seen it,
David Crumb. Yeah.
His wife was there. We've had a number of people, I've been on Nicole Wallace's show. I mean, there's a lot of people who are very thoughtful. Steve Schmidt, he hasn't seen it yet, but he saw LBJ, and, I've had conversations with him. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans that are really frightened of what's happening in this country right now.
Well, before we go, how's your dad, Carl Reiner, doing?
Oh, he's doing great. Thanks for asking. I mean, he's really doing great. He's 96. And like he says in this documentary that's on HBO, he says he gets up every morning and he reads the obits. If he's not in it, he eats breakfast.
Yeah, I've sat down with him twice now, and he just amazes me every time.
Oh, he's
still
incredible.
Writing?
He writes every day. Unbelievable. He's amazing.
Well,
amazing,
please give him my very best.
I will. Thanks for asking about him.
Well, once again, Rob Reiner's film is called Shock and Awe. It's available now on DirecTV, and it opens in theaters Friday, July 13th. Rob Reiner, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Rob Reiner for joining me on the podcast. Once more, Shock and Awe opens in theaters Friday, July 13th. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kickass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kickass News. Kickass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.